Alright, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Rock and roll. I know that's something you're very passionate about.
I stand toe to toe with it, man. I love it. I love loud guitar music with a lot of melody, and especially like music that's not pretentious. You know what I mean?
Do you think we're losing it at all, or do you think we're?
I don't think you'll ever lose it. You know what I mean? It's just sort of, it's not trendy at the moment, is it? You know what I mean? It's trendy to be in like. Well, it's trendy. EDM music's, I guess, trendy, or DJ's a bit trendy, but it's always kip in my world, you know what I mean? I never ever like go down some dance route to get on the radio or to get more fans or whatever at your gig, you know what I mean? I'll play it until the f***ing day I die, you know what I mean? Even if there's one person that...
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, that's the way of the world though now, isn't it? No one really wants to learn music, does it? Everyone's too busy at home, everyone's on the laptops, you know what I mean? No one really wants to put the time and effort into going into a rehearsing room, and everyone's very busy these days doing f*** all, you know what I mean? No one really wants to put the time into rehearsing and, you know, give a bit of time, whereas when we were Oasis, we were in there 7 days a week rehearsing, you know what I mean? And then we sacrificed a lot, I guess, for it, and then I guess you get the fruits of it back, you know what I mean?
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Hope you guys are all right. I hope you guys enjoyed the last episode that we did, which was the Don't Look Back in Anger breakdown with James Hargreaves, which was really, really cool episode. And we are going to be doing a part two of Don't Look Back in Anger probably next time, because we've got a couple of other bits in as well. We've got a fantastic breakdown from Paul Costello as well on a play to you. And also, if you guys want to get in touch about Don't Look Back in Anger, then feel free. We could always drop that in as well. But in the meantime, today we're going to do a sort of a two-parter. Later on, we're going to have a little bit more from our conversation with James Hargreaves, where we talked about... the state of rock and roll music, what's going on in the charts and indie music and stuff. But before that, we're going to be catching up with our friend Ben Burrell. Ben was on the podcast before talking about standing on the shoulder of giants. He works for Absolute Radio. He does a ton of podcasts, generally a good guy. And he did this documentary recently called Whatever Happened to My Rock and Roll, hence the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club song to start the show. And yes, we dig into that. So it's all about what is going on with indie music, with rock and roll, why is there not been another good band really to sort of change things and make things new and exciting, probably since the Arctic Monkeys. So we get into that both with Ben and then later on with James. So should be good fun. Hope you enjoy it. Feel free to get in touch on the socials and let me know what you think about this topic. It's definitely an interesting one. And hopefully we can change things. And also in the process of putting this together, I've edited in some clips from some cool bands, including a couple that feature on the Brits and Pieces CD I mentioned a couple of times. So we'll support new music where we can. I think I mentioned it later, but I did consider before the pandemic doing a podcast focused on new music. But then, obviously that kind of went by the wayside. But yeah, I'd love to start that up again. But there's loads of people doing loads of great stuff on new music, or with the Sam Shiner and the guys on Borough House Radio and stuff like that. So there are now opportunities for bands to get their music played. It might not be on mainstream radio, but there's plenty of fans out there. So Yeah, but anyway, we chat on about that in the episode. Just to let you know as well, we have a live event announced. It is with Alan McGee, and it's going to be at the Water Rats in London, my old stamping ground, on the 21st of May. So it's going to be a social distanced show with only 45 tickets available. So it just got announced today. Today is Monday the 15th. So by the time you're hearing this, it may well have already sold out. But if not, have a look on the link on my socials here. And yeah, and the chance to get out and about again, eh? And then we never know. So once things open up in June, hopefully, we might be able to do a few more of these things. Yes, very much looking forward to it. All right, no other news in the world of Oasis since we last spoke. We still are awaiting Noel's new song and video, but nothing going so far. So we'll crack on with the interview here with Ben Burrell, and then we will go straight into the interview with James Hargreaves, and I'll see you on the other side.
Go. Rocky's dead, Rocky's dead, Rocky's dead, Rocky's dead. Talk to my friend, that's what he said. He's wrestling around, no, Rocky's dead, it's all over. Rock and roll is dead. Bottle of Jack, Mercury's red, muscle car, Grateful Dead. Lord of the Rings, settling the lead. Devil's tattoo, wretched red, it's all over. Rock and roll is dead, take it time.
Welcome back to the Oasis podcast for his second appearance. Ben Burrell, how you doing, man?
Second appearance, yeah. I'm worried. I feel second album syndrome coming.
Well, one more and you get a hat trick ball like Soccer AM used to do. So we just got to see.
Oh yeah, in the glory days of Soccer AM.
Exactly. I don't know if they still do hat trick balls now, but anyway, I do. Oh, let's not. This could be the Soccer AM podcast. Yeah,
we've got to Soccer AM already. Seconds in.
Next, it'll be Dream Team. That's normally where these. Oh teams
yeah, I'm willing to go there.
So yeah, Ben, if people don't know, you do the Absolute Radio afternoon show, and yeah, and about 412 podcasts, I think it is, at the current tally.
412 is the correct number. Yes, thank you for getting that right. Yeah, a lot. I mean, I work in audio and radio, and lots of people have lots of downtime and money to spend, so they're commissioning stuff left, right, and center. So the world of podcasting is booming.
Yeah,
it's good. It's fun, in a way, as you know.
Yeah, and when we were talking last, I mean, you know, you did the when we last spoke, it was because you've done one of your many podcasts was Long Player Pod, and you go look and, you know, do deep dives into albums. What I really like about it is it's actually, obviously you're a professional at this stuff, unlike us amateur idiots, and so you actually like write the thing and produce it properly, so it sounds like a proper documentary and not just some div, you know, babbling on for half an hour. You know, and I was like, this is really good stuff. Like, why you work for Absolute? Absolute should like commission you to do a bunch of these, you know, because as much as we enjoy, you know, hearing music played and people reading out texts from listeners, like, that's fine. But why not have these documentaries go out? Yeah, they're great. And then so I was really pleased to see, yeah, you did a documentary actually properly, you know, commissioned by Absolute. And like with Matt Berry reading the intro to it, which must have been exciting for you. And
it's still exciting hearing him say my name or anything connected with anything I do, because he's a proper comedian, isn't he? He's a proper good actor as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a treat. I demanded they did that.
I'll pay his fee. I don't care. So where did the genesis of the idea come about? So a lot of these interviews are from like a year ago, aren't they, when you're actually like going to gigs? Yeah. So tell us about the genesis of it and then actually getting it onto the air.
Well, what I will say is Absolute have a long history of commissioning documentaries, and this is the first one they've commissioned that's more of a question rather than a kind of, this is what happened at this time, or this is like a historic music documentary. So I'm thankful to them for that. But it started ages and ages ago, about two, three years ago, something like that. I thought I might do it on my own and put it out as a podcast, a kind of three or four part documentary looking at why guitar music maybe isn't as successful now as it was sort of 10 years ago. Maybe we'll get into the whys and hows in a bit. But it occurred to me suddenly one day, and I did a couple of interviews, including speaking to a guy from a band signed to, funnily enough, Noel Gallagher's management company. And that only fueled my kind of desire to work it out, because he had some interesting points and was really interesting to talk to about it. And from there, I kind of worked on it a little bit, but it wasn't really going anywhere. And then, as you've just said, Absolute heard some of my podcasts and said, do you want to do some stuff for us and we'll pay you? And obviously the answer to that is always yes. Yes, I will take your money. And again, I know they're my employer, but they're really good at giving the right amount of money that you need to do something like this, and to do it well. And I'm really appreciative to them for doing that. So yeah, they just turned around and said, do you want to do a documentary for us? And I submitted some ideas, and this was top of my list, and they agreed to it kind of straight away. And I think it is an interesting question, and it's a question that doesn't have a right answer, but lots of people want to talk about it, which meant that we could do some really great interviews.
It's a fascinating one, and it's one that's almost like, it's like people don't even really talk about it or think about it, but this is a massive, massive cultural shift, right? And not just like, oh, well, you know, there's not as many guitar bands around as there used to be, but this is ridiculous. Like in the history of music, like you talk about in the thing, it's like every era, every genre, every two or three years, there's a big change in another new band, and there's a big change in another new band. And you can list them all going back to the Beatles, right? And then literally since probably Arctic Monkeys, there hasn't been another one that's had that cultural impact and like, oh, and now this is the new sound. It's like, it's a bit more punkier, it's a bit more garagier, it's a bit more kind of indie or whatever the variation on the theme is. And that just hasn't been, you know, there's always bands, and there's always, you know, the festivals are always full every year of sort of small bands on smaller labels or on bigger labels, but just not doing so great. But in terms of that mainstream breakout success, yeah, it's just not. And I mean, I think this is a book, you know what I mean? Like, I think because it's deeper than your documentary, like 50 odd minutes is great, but I think this could be a book, because this is like a serious, significant cultural shift, right?
Yeah, it's funny because researching the doc, there was lots of articles. There was one in Rolling Stone that was really good, and there was a couple of others sort of smattered around, but there wasn't really too much written about it and as to why this has happened. There was a BBC show that's been, for unknown reasons, completely eradicated from the iPlayer. Who knows why? And Noel Gallagher was actually on that, and Lauren Laverne hosted. But that didn't really go anywhere from what I saw of it. But yeah, I think you're right. It's funny that there seems to be lots of chatter around this. It pops up quite regularly if a band is being interviewed, say, on, you know, a random radio station or for a random podcast. But there isn't too much kind of deep diving into it as to why this might be an occurrence. And we were kind of quite lucky with that, commissioning the documentary, because we kind of felt that we were obviously not breaking new ground, because it's stuff that's quite obvious and people's opinions. But we were quite lucky because no one had really put all this stuff together in one place before, certainly not in terms of an audio or a radio documentary. So that was good from our point of view, but it's bad from the kind of bigger picture, because no one's really getting to the bottom of it. And I think once you do get to the bottom of it, then you might work out, well, is this going to be it from now on? Or are we going to see a new band coming through? Or if we can help that situation in any way? So yeah, it's a funny one that there hasn't been too much written about it, but I think that might come the further away we get from the Arctic Monkeys and that big debut album.
Yeah, it's funny. I did an interview with the guy from the band Sargent. I don't know if you remember Sargent. They were sort of they kind of had a funny old situation. I interviewed them because they played a few shows with Oasis, but it was a really interesting one because there was that sort of wave of bands like, you know, after Kaiser Chiefs and stuff. And then you had all those bands sort of in sort of 2006, 2007, like The View and people like that, who I suppose you had the Kooks were massive. And like, there was all that wave of them at that point. But then they all had like really good first albums and did really well, but then none of them really followed up with successful second albums. And then what the guy from Sargent was saying was, well, what happened was like, we sort of had all these problems and went away. And then when we came back and our album was ready to be released, it was like 2008, 2009. And it was kind of, it was over. And the big thing for him was Radio One pulled support for indie music, you know, and that was the big thing. Cause you know, obviously like indie music was just a mainstay of the radio, especially Radio One being the biggest for young people at least. And then, especially you had the evening session every night playing 2 hours of music. And then the late night beyond that tended to be primarily guitar based stuff. Whereas they just stopped doing that, you know, and the odd track will get through here and then, but generally it's just not there. So if you haven't got Radio One doing it, and there's not, you know, and obviously we haven't got Top of the Pops anymore, we haven't got all these other things to give mainstream, to give the mainstream bump, then it's like, well, how are they going to get that mainstream bump?
I think, yeah, that's that, and that comes up in the documentary. We talked to a radio plugger who, funny enough, plugged the first couple of Oasis singles, a guy called Liam Walsh, who's got so many good Oasis stories. In fact, I think in the documentary he mentions that they got the Oasis contract, the first record contract, or one of the first record contracts, through on their old fax machine. And he tells this great story about, you know, the crappy kind of fax paper coming through, this being their big kind of big break. But yeah, he basically says that radio won't play guitar music anymore, and that's true. And I work for a radio station that plays guitar music, and the new music we get often doesn't fit either our sound of the station, as in like bands like Artie Monkeys have gone in a different direction, or another band have gone perhaps electronic or whatever, so we don't particularly play that new music from the big bands. And the new music that's coming through from bands that we might play just isn't big enough, and we're not in the business of breaking too many new bands for lots of different reasons that I won't go into right now. So radio play is a massive problem for bands at the moment, because, you know, as you say, like 15-20 years ago, a station like Capital FM, which is a big top 40 station, would have played the Kaiser Chiefs and Artie Monkeys and probably Franz Ferdinand, whereas these days they would never play anything close to that. It's just big pop hits. And then you get into kind of the idea of, well, is this a chicken and egg situation? If they stop playing it, then does it stop getting to the charts, or did it stop getting to the charts and they stop playing it? And there's lots of different answers as to why that might be. But it's a big, big problem for guitar bands. There isn't that outlet on radio, which used to be their kind of mainstay in terms of promotion. And they're not getting it on Spotify because, for the most part, especially with older groups, guitar fans are listening in other areas apart from Spotify. That's especially a problem for a band like The Killers and those big kind of early noughties bands, because generally guitar fans will listen to it on Spotify, but they'll also buy it and listen to it in a variety of other ways. So it's kind of like, it's quite a complicated thing in regards to distribution of guitar music. And no one's kind of found a way of making that better. And I don't think we will find a way of making that better either in the current climate.
It's really interesting one. I mean, the one thing that kind of gives me hope is, you know, the impact of the Liam Gallagher comeback over the last few years, because
there's definitely a huge fan base for it. I mean, just look at Twitter. There's a huge, huge fan base for that type of music. And sorry to interrupt, but it's interesting you said the Kooks earlier. I think that the Kooks were the kind of death of that early noughties scene. Do you know what I mean? Because as you said, like we had in the 60s, there was like the Beatles and always great bands. In the 70s, there was, you know, punk, and that was incredible. In the 80s, we had more great bands. In the 90s, there was Britpop. And then in the early noughties was the natural progression from all of that. And we had those great bands and Franz Ferdinand going into the chart with Take Me Out into the top five was extraordinary. And it was music that was, I remember hearing Take Me Out in clubs, like hearing it in proper clubs. And that was such a big deal. Because I don't think that happened, even in Britpop, I don't think that happened too much, especially not in kind of mainstream clubs. And then as that scene kind of progressed, it got bigger and bigger, and the Artie Monkeys came out with that debut album, and Franz Ferdinand did pretty well in America, and then the Kaiser Chiefs were doing pretty well over here. And then when you get bands like the Kooks come out, it's for me, personally speaking, it's a big shift away from what that scene was. And I think you started with bands like the Libertines, who were exciting and rough and had a bit about them, and Arctic Monkeys, and they were kind of had those amazing lyrics and a real different feel to their songs, even though sonically their songs are pretty similar to others. The lyrics and the band's kind of wit really set them apart. And then you end up with a band like the Kooks, which, no disrespect to them, and you know, they did very well. They just haven't got that thing that pushes the scene on. They're just another, they're just a reincarnation of everything that's come before. And I think the scene started to almost eat itself and fall apart. And that was the death of that scene. And we've never really recovered from that. We've just kind of since then got bands and artists that are pretty much like that scene. You know, I really like Blossoms. I think they're a great band, but are they wildly different from that scene? Probably not. No. Same with Sam Fender. Is he wildly different from that scene? I mean, he sounds a little bit like Bruce Springsteen, but they haven't got that band like Franz Ferdinand or Arctic Monkeys that brings something new. And I don't mean they changed the game or they were completely, you know, a completely new sound, but they definitely brought something different to the table. I mean, Franz Ferdinand brought kind of rock music you could dance to, and Arctic Monkeys brought that amazing kind of lyrical power. I don't know if bands since then have brought something new to the table, and that's why the whole scene's fallen apart. And I don't think we will get that until either someone just completely goes out their own and does it, or we have a big kind of cultural shift and something changes within guitar music. But again, I don't know if that's going to happen.
So it's interesting, isn't it? It's that, like you said, it's chicken egg. Is it that, you know, there isn't the great bands out there that are, you know, there isn't the great songwriters out there as good as Jarvis, Noel, Liam, Jarvis, Noel, Damon, like and Alex Turner, whatever, they're just not out there. Or is it that they are out there, but they're just not getting that opportunity? And I don't know. I mean, we did get, you know, for instance, our my mate Mark, who does Brits and Pieces on Twitter, put out this CD last year. And like a compilation of bands that had sort of come to him on Twitter, and you've got a bit more of you know, we've got Sam Shiner, who's sort of just, you know, a woman on Twitter that loves indie music, and he's got a bit of a following, so he's now doing online radio stuff and just playing new bands and just trying to get it out there, because, you know, you've got the odd shows like Exposure and things like that that will play new bands, but generally it's you're not getting that, and so I just think it's, I mean, I kind of bemoan the fact that, like, I did look to about this time last year before the pandemic, like I was starting to look at doing a new bands podcast, because what I wanted to sort of generate was like that same buzz that you would get reading The Enemy week to week, right? Where you would have like, you'd have arguments between bands, or you'd have like, oh, this new single is coming out by this people. And they'd, you know, and there'd be a competition factor of who was the best new band and stuff. And it just doesn't feel like that's there at the moment, and you almost want people. And the other thing, I mean, that, so coming on to like the point that, well, are we at a point now where you can't really be, because of social media being as it is, you can't really be controversial and outrageous and, you know, have fights. Well, obviously you can't really have fights and stuff because we're in a lockdown at the moment, but like, I don't remember there being like gigs that were like, oh wow, this happened, you know, like crazy moments that you're gonna buzz off and they're gonna generate some activity and some, you know, some buzz off people, you know what I mean? Is, I don't know if people are a bit too safe now.
I think that plays a big role in it. I think you can't really be a rock star if you're a 20 something now. You can't really be an outrageous rock star. Even someone like Youngblood, who, you know, for all intents and purposes is a punk act, it's not quite, well, I mean, that's the branding, isn't it? But I think that's they've tried to market him a little bit as like a kind of outsider, And I don't know if it really works in this current climate, because does he really say anything that's outrageous or anything like that? I think it's very difficult to be a rock star in this current climate, because you'll be cancelled before you even make it, which definitely plays a role in this lack of kind of bands. But it's interesting you say about new bands coming through. I think there are loads of great bands, loads of talented songwriters out there. So I don't want to make this into a never-ending plug, but I do on Spotify this year, out of sheer boredom, I've started to recommend a song a day on Spotify, and we try and throw a fair amount of new music in there. And I cannot believe the amount of good songs and good bands I've come across that I've never heard of before, or never even heard mentioned by anyone else. There's loads and loads of good music out there. But for whatever reason, bands aren't getting picked up. And I think some of the really great songwriters that would have been in a band 15, 20 years ago are doing different things. There's a new songwriter I really like called Dylan Fraser, who is an electronic artist, but he loves Radiohead, and he's got a really good ear for kind of rock melodies. And I think maybe 20 years ago, he would have been in a really, really good band. But nowadays, he's like an electronic musician, because he hasn't been inspired by guitar music over the last 15 years, because it's been a bit drab. It's been a bit kind of Kooks or whoever. So that's quite interesting that he has Radiohead and bands as an inspiration, but has taken that in a different direction and very rarely makes guitar-based tunes. And I think that's definitely part of the problem. I think maybe rock music itself is partly to blame as well for not pushing the envelope. And I think what we've seen with hip hop and other genres like that is, especially over the last 15 years, they really have pushed themselves further and further, and the creativity's flowed a lot more than maybe some of the mainstream rock acts. I will say though that the guitar music is still really creative, but a lot of the more creative bands just aren't making it for whatever reason.
When I was young, I thought that I could reach the sky, but when I look up, no, it doesn't seem so bright. And then I grew up, that was when I realized that everything's fucked, so I don't get out of bed to fight.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like, even stuff like in recent years, stuff like Janelle Monáe, you know, and you think, wow, you know, this is great music and so many ideas. And it, like, so, you know, it's that much, you know, in the soul genre as well. Like, there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on, like pulling back from the 60s and beyond, like that is them mixing up with this modern stuff. I mean, you look at a band like Gorillaz, I suppose. Like, Gorillaz, I think, have made some of the best music at like the last sort of, in this period, in this sort of dearth of rock music period. But they've just combined everything. And sort of Mark Ronson, similar, you know, he's always like picking bits and pieces from all over. And so it's become more like that, that it's much more of a magpie thing of smashing everything together. And I think that stems from the fact that, like, I think when we were kids, like, I know you're a bit younger than me, but like, it was still, and going back into people that grew up in the 70s and 80s, it was like, it was much more tribal, in that if you were into rock, you were into rock. If you were into indie, you were into pop, and you dressed that way. And it was much more part of your culture, and it was, you were part of a gang, and that was what you listened to. Whereas I don't think you have that much anymore. I think generally, obviously, there probably will still be rock fans and indie fans and whatever out there, but I think because everything is so accessible all the time, that you just have access to everything always. It's not like you can only buy one album a month when you get your pocket money, so therefore people have got access to so much more. So like you're saying, like Dylan Fraser, you know, maybe if he was growing up in the 90s, he would have just been a pure Britpop kid and would have just made Britpop music. But but yeah, actually, when you've got access to all this stuff all the time, you will just go off and do all these different things. And you do end up with, like, you know, Billie Eilish and people like this, that there's rock elements, or there's classic songwriting elements into what she does. But there's so much more to it than that. And it goes beyond kind of just being in a band. So I think that's part of it. Just that everything is available all the time now.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think, I made the point in the doc, and actually I stole it because we interviewed Roger Daltrey for the documentary, and he was really good. Actually, he gave us a lot of time, and sadly he gave us the best bits when we weren't recording, as we were trying to leave the Royal Albert Hall, which was so frustrating. But he swore on tape a lot, which was great and sounded great on the doc. But one of the things he said, which we actually put in the doc as my voiceover, was that he basically thinks that there's no space for bands anymore, because if you're in your bedroom and you want to create a really great piece of music, you can just fire up your laptop and do it that way. And you don't need those four people around you anymore like you did previously. You don't need a bass player because you've got it on your laptop. You don't need necessarily a drummer because you've got it on your laptop. Now, of course, eventually when you get on stage, you probably will do. But there's not that kind of need for a band straight away. So no one gets used to being in a band. So you do get people, again, like Dylan Fraser, who doesn't need the band because he can do it all on his laptop, and that leads to other genres. So that was quite interesting and quite sad in a way that music's kind of lost that, I don't know, authenticity maybe. But again, I think with everything, it will probably be one of those things where people go back to that, and it becomes, you know, like the resurgence of vinyl, for example, or fresh food, where we start to kind of go back to like being more organic with it. So I can see that happening, but I don't see that happening for a while at the moment.
No, not at all. It's interesting. I interviewed Andrew Cushing, you know, who's done some tunes with Noel Gallagher and has had some, you know, headway. And it was interesting because, like, when you interview a band, like, I'm always, even back in the day, like, I was always interested in, like, well, have you given up your day job, though? You know what I mean? Like, that's what, yeah, that's what, yeah, I'm always more interested in, rather than just like, oh, tell us about your influences. I'm like, yeah, but do you still work on the fish counter at Sainsbury's? Right? That's like, that to me is fascinating, that personal stuff. But then no one ever talked about that. But so when I spoke to Andrew, I was like, well, you know, he's, you know, just had a couple of demos, well, not demos, like YouTube videos and minor singles and things like that. And I was like, okay, but have you actually, like, are you doing this full time now? He's like, oh yeah, I'm full time now. I'm like, well, that's interesting. So number one, like, there are still people getting contracts, you know, saying, okay, there's enough money for you to be full time and to afford to, like, go into a studio with Noel Gallagher. So that's still happening, you know, at that A&R level, it is still happening. It won't be for as many people as it used to, but some people are still getting that golden ticket. Now, whether Andrew can now take it to the next level and, you know, he might be back, you know, on a building site in 3 years, who knows, or he might end up being the next Ed Sheeran. You just don't know. But I suppose that's now up to him to kind of really write the songs to make that happen. But the other point I made with him was, well, why aren't you in a band? You know, why is Declan McKenna or Sam Fender or Pete or Capaldi, why are these kids, like, they should be bands. That should be the next wave of bands. Sam Fender's band and Dylan McKenna's band. But they're not. They're all solo artists. And he made the similar point. He was like, well, yeah, but I wrote all the songs myself. And if I was in a band, I'd have to share the money five ways. You think, yeah, fair enough. So I think it's partially that, like, it's going back to what you're saying about if you can do it yourself, why not? Yeah. I open wide to show I care, but I can't take much more of it, you know, but it's gonna take more than this, for sure, and I wanna know what went wrong, and I wanna know, where's my family gone?
I could really see Alex Turner, if things were different, I could really see him just being a solo artist. I mean,
yeah,
I think he probably he loves being in a band, and that band are incredible. But I don't know, it feels at times like it's a solo project of his, especially that last album, Tranquility Base Hotel. And
definitely, yeah.
It feels at times like he is the creative engine. And as you say, if that is all down to you, then would you suddenly think, I don't really need a band, I'm happy to be on my own? I don't know. I mean, it's... it's not better to be in a band, but I think for guitar music, it probably is, because you can easily see someone like Sam Fender changing and making different types of music and shying away from the guitar, especially if his record company suddenly turn around after maybe a bad album and say, probably need to find a hit within you. And you know, we have heard, and that appears in the documentary as well, of record companies saying, have you thought about doing it this way? Or have you thought about that? And moving away from guitar music because it isn't fashionable at the moment. So that'd be interesting to see what happens with artists like him and as you say, like Declan McKenna in the future, and whether they go to a less guitar-based sound or not.
You really heard, I tell you what, I heard that in the new Royal Blood stuff. And yeah. I thought Royal Blood must have worked with a pop producer, because that new album is so poppy, you know, it really jumps out of the radio, not necessarily in a bad way. I prefer their earlier stuff, but you know, like it just felt like, I bet the record company said, come on, work with, you know, you've got to go and work with Andrew Wyatt or someone like Liam has, you know, you've got to go and change your sound. Actually, they didn't. It was self-produced. So whether they've just then made that choice themselves, but
I think they probably thought, we're a big band and we want to continue to be a big band, which is no, you know, that's no problem. Yeah. But also, again, I have no idea if this is true or not, but I kind of feel like if you're in a big band right now and Royal Blood, you know, have done those two albums and they were great records, and they were influenced by sort of bands like Queens of the Stone Age and bands like that. If you're looking around now thinking, who am I influenced by? It's probably not going to be a guitar band, because as I said earlier, for me, no big guitar band has broken through and revolutionized the way guitar music sounds. So if you're in a guitar band, you probably are going to draw influences from elsewhere and from different types of music. I gave my knuckles a rump, all that money, spiderweb cracks on the mirror. I see someone, but not somebody. I let my demons take hold and choke on me. Can't fill these holes that I'm digging. Can't stop my heart when it's sinking. But if I could, then I would. If I could, then I would. If I could. If I could. You don't think I would pretend? Trouble's coming, but I still don't know when. That's the furthest that I can hear in my head. Take David Bowie, for example. I mean, he came back with that big comeback album the next day, which was a guitar-based album. And that didn't particularly come out in the middle of that indie renaissance in the early noughties, but it certainly had a guitar sound to it. By the time he brought out Black Star, he was drawing influences from people like Kendrick Lamar and jazz. Mm. And obviously David Bowie is always changing, but I thought that was an interesting shift for him to go from a guitar album to a very different sounding album and be influenced by someone like Kendrick Lamar. And I think the same thing might be happening with bands like Royal Blood, where they are listening to different types of music and they are being influenced by it, and it's not always going to be guitar music.
Mm. No, I agree. I think that's... Oh dear. So is all hope lost?
Yes, that's it. Start listening to hip hop. It's over.
To keep listening. Absolute is literally just going to freeze their playlist in 2005, you know, and that's it.
We pretty much have. But actually, Do you know what? Oasis is kind of an interesting example, because I mean, I know you've covered this many times before. I know people have mentioned it on the podcast many times before, but they're a band that has a young fan base now. Where's that come from? And I think that just goes to show you the state of new bands coming through. And again, it's not to do with quality, it's to do with whether they're breaking through or not. And the fact that I've been to Noel Gallagher High Flying Birds gigs, and I've been to Oasis gigs on those final couple of tours, and there's been like teenagers there. And even myself, you know, I was born in 1987, so I'm not in that classic Oasis age range. But it's strange to see that the kids are kind of flocking to Oasis if they like guitar music, and rightfully so. And also it's interesting to see the Oasis career, kind of the journey they went on. So by the time indie music was back in vogue and like sort of 2005-ish, they were releasing Don't Believe the Truth, which you know, arguably was their most successful album post the big 90s period. So I think it's interesting to see that they really did well when indie was back. And it's interesting to see that they've carried that on. And while it's great for Oasis, and I'm sure great for if the band ever get back together, and great for their back catalogue and the money they make from it, but it's quite worrying that if you're a teenager and you love guitar music, chances are you're enjoying Oasis rather than, you know, the next Arctic Monkeys or whoever.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I was going to say earlier, like, I think hope does lie in the Liam Gallagher comeback, because you see the excitement and the buzz of, you know, being at a Liam show, and more so a Liam show than a Noel show, because Noel, it does tend to be a bit more of a, you know, more of a concert, you know, enjoy a brilliant band, you know, with a great songwriter playing the songs really well. Whereas a Liam show is an Oasis show. And you look around and it is. I mean, I think a lot of it now is dads bringing their kids, you know, and because that's the thing, that first generation of Oasis fans, of which I'm, you know, I was born 80. So I'm like, you know, I was 14 when Definitely Maybe came out. But if you were 24 when Definitely Maybe came out, your kids are now, you know, in their late teens, early 20s. And so actually, you know, you do see a lot of that. It was teenagers on dad's shoulders and things like that. And if that, it could even be that, you know, it could be that it's that generation of kids now, like my, our mate, a big podcast contributor, this guy, Ryan Harvey, and his son is a really good drummer. And he's like even been in the School of Rock musical and things. And, you know, and so it's like, okay, well, it's this next generation now of stuff where they'll be like going through all the, you know, brought up with dad playing Oasis and Blur and whoever else. And so, yeah, maybe it's that. Maybe it's just we've sort of had to skip this generation, and now it's the next generation of teenagers are going to do it. Ben, tell me that I'm right, please.
I agree. But I think the, and again, we touched on this in the doc a little bit, and I'd love to go into this in more detail. But the only slight issue is that, like we see with live music, is that it tends to be heritage acts that are relied upon to bring in the big crowds. So, you know, it's great that Liam's drawing a young fan base, but where do we go from here? Are they just going to churn out like average Liam Gallagher Oasis covers? I hope not. I think you do need to evolve to progress. And we spoke to a live agent who books lots and lots of different acts, and this guy called John Giddings, who looks after the Isle of Wight Festival, and he booked Bowie, and he's booked Beyonce and all these stars. And he is in no doubt that guitar music live is the best type of live experience. But he does say, like, for the most part, it's old bands who won't move on, who are still booking these massive gigs. So it's great the Rolling Stones are still touring and still being massively successful, and they're not taking the place of a younger band coming through. But it's almost like the audience are still hung up on that golden era of rock, and live music is a really good example of where that's still happening. And whilst that is maybe a problem, and that's something maybe that needs to be overcome, I think, and again, this is the final bit of the doc. We spoke to Fran Healy from Travis, and at the start, we spoke to him twice in the documentary. At the start, he was very upset, very upset.
Yeah.
I mean, he was at home in Berlin, and I literally thought at one stage he was going to cry on the phone because he was distraught about the current state of guitar music. But by the end, we spoke to him on Skype, and like recently, about a couple of weeks before the doc went out, so like almost a year and a half later or something like that. And he was very excited about the future, because I think he'd heard a lot of good stuff coming through, and he mentions Phoebe Bridges and people like that. And I know they're not exactly similar to Liam or Oasis or the great bands we've had over the last 30, 40 years. But the point he made was that great songwriting is coming through guitar music and coming through with bands. And his point was that that's where you start. Those are kind of the green shoots, and everything else should come from there. Because if you haven't got the talent coming through, then you're going to get nowhere. But his point was that the talent is coming through. So that's the hardest bit, kind of overcome. We just need to wait for the rest now, or need to help with the rest now. So I think there are reasons to be positive. And as Fran says, if the talent is there, then the battle's kind of half won already. It's just the rest you need to work out. Hey! We're tied to the 90s in the middle. I'm terribly frightened. Taking it fast, taking it slow. Hey! It's thunder and lightning. Hey! It's terrible frightening. Oh, God knows where it goes. But I know this soul to take.
with you. Cool. All right. I'll tell you what, I asked just before we came on, I quickly asked a question on Twitter. So let's see what responses we've had, shall we? Now, this is Oasis Podcast Twitter fans, so it might be a very specific set of responses. Dave Strang says, kids don't want to be rock stars anymore. They want to be YouTubers. I think that's fair. But why not be a YouTuber with a guitar? You know, or maybe with a band in the back. But I suppose, yeah, you can, like we're saying, how can you be a band? It's so much more individual, isn't it?
I think that's true. I think like people have said before, YouTubers are the new rock stars. I think that if you're young and you want to get your point across, it at one stage was with a guitar, and now it's probably a camera in your bedroom. Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Yeah, it's true. That's fair. You don't need that medium of songwriting, do you, to get your view across or to feel like you're heard, even if you haven't necessarily got anything to say. Matt at M4Tet says, I've just read this article from 2014. Art became less attractive to certain levels of population as a decent career model. Oasis were some of the last uprising rebels in rock and roll and probably the last big working class success story. But that's something you say in the doc, isn't it? It's like, you know, it needs to be, you know, it almost feels better when it's working class people. You know what I mean?
I think that's so key. I mean, look at all the great bands. It's usually from a working class background. And I think Ted Kessler is the guy we speak to with the documentary, who's the former editor of Q magazine. And he says it has to be kind of working class kids from the wrong side of the tracks. And he says in the doc that he doesn't think that's ever going to happen again. And he spoke to Paul Weller and Noel Gallagher about it, and they agreed. And I think that's true. I think if you get a group of young kids who have seen the world and they've experienced life and the hardships it can bring, then sometimes great music comes out of that. And you know, we've seen that, especially with the Thatcher government and all the great music that came out of that absolute mess of a decade or however long it was. I don't think that's happening anymore, because, you know, working class kids maybe aren't picking up guitars. Like we say, maybe they are just going onto YouTube, or maybe they are creating music on their laptop, and that kind of the thing that's driven guitar music for so long has maybe gone elsewhere, which is a shame.
Yeah, cool. A couple more here. We've got Calvin Betton says, many reasons. Kids make music to fill the time. It used to be that guitar was the cheapest way to make music. Now it's not. Now it's your phone. Kids need inspiration. They want to be like their heroes. The lack of superstars with guitars around 2007-ish had an effect.
Yeah, totally.
And then we've got Brits and Pieces, who obviously did that brilliant CD. I think it's something simply to do with cycles. We know good guitar music is out there, so it's nothing to do with quality. Do young people determine what's in the main single chart? If so, maybe it's just not cool to like the music your parents liked, although not during the 90s.
The 90s was funny, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, I remember loving my parents' music, and they would play 60s music, and then I remember hearing that a lot in Oasis, obviously, and bands like that. But that doesn't seem to be happening too much these days. I mean, maybe we will see a raft of bands in 10 years time that were inspired by Arctic Monkeys, I don't know, but that doesn't seem to be happening as much. That's funny.
Yeah, I'll go with last one. So Joe Ryan, what is mainstream? Surely the internet has killed any huge music scenes like the last indie one. What's the scene now? Is there one? A sea shanty is number two in the charts, for fuck's sake. So that's it.
Sea shanties. So big genre.
It took sea shanties 200 years, so maybe it'll be 200 years for the indie music. There you go.
I think there are still scenes. I mean, there are still. But again, like we said earlier, they're not as tribal as they once were. Because, you know, if you used to spend all your pocket money investing in one tribe of music, then you probably would have sticked to it. But nowadays you can just get it on Spotify. But I think there are still tribes, but maybe not so much with the guitar music.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, look, I think that's...
I feel like it's got depressing at the end.
Yeah, no. Well, I was quite happy. I'm thinking about doing that new sea shanty scene. If only the Enemy was around still, they'd be in a proper form. You know, you could be like, you know, the new sea shanty revolution.
They would have a sea shanty band on the front page, and they would say, this band will change your life.
Yeah. Benza, where can the people find you, and where can they find this great doc?
So the doc is available on the Absolute Radio app right now and via our website. It's called This Is... God, you know what? We've changed the title so many times. Every time I come to say it now, I get it wrong. So it's named after the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club song, Whatever Happened to My Rock and Roll. And that's what it's called. It's available, as I say, on the Absolute Radio app and on our website right now. Just Google Whatever Happened to My Rock and Roll, Ben Burrell, and you'll find it. I put my heart and soul into it, so I hope you like it.
Yeah, no, it's a great piece of work. And as I say, I'm really pleased that, like, you know, this subject is being looked into, because, you know, it is like we were saying at the start, such a massive cultural shift, and it's weirdly being kind of ignored. But yeah, anyway, well, we don't ignore it over here, do we?
We're talking about doing another doc on it, but I'm not quite sure if there'll be material, but I hope people maybe give it a little bit more time and investigate it further. That'd be great.
Cool. Okay. And where can the people find you?
You can find me on Absolute Radio 1-4 weekdays. We play a lot of Oasis, as I said last time on the show. and also I do a Bob Dylan podcast called Bob Dylan Album by Album, which is coming back very, very soon.
Cool. Ben, thank you so much, mate. I do really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
All right. Speak to you later. And but I know you've been focused a lot on your channel all about, well, what can we do about it? Can we get it back? And interestingly, in the last couple of weeks, you know, Mogwai got to number one in the charts. Maximo Park just almost did. I think they got to number two in the end, you know, but it feels like maybe there's a stirring of something could be happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done several videos talking about this now, because I did a video 2 weeks ago called Britpop Versus Now, Why Was Music So Much Better in the 90s? And at that point, my inbox just exploded. I mean, I've been getting messages from Italy, Brazil, Indonesia, and all over the UK, of course, and all over Europe and America, everywhere. People saying, yes, we feel the same way. It has absolutely gone mental, which, you know, that's exactly what I want. I want to know that there are tens of thousands of us out there who actually give a shit about proper rock and roll being in the charts. You know, something I said in that video is I'm not ready to say this is consigned to the past. And it's great. It's so exciting to find that there are so many of us that feel the same way. Actually, the turning point that made me decide, damn it, I'm going to do something about this, was something you posted on Twitter. You posted, you posted the link to that documentary on the one that had Fran Healy talking, and I listened to it all the way through, and that was kind of my tipping point, where I decided, do you know what, I'm in my prime of life, I can do this, let's try and sort this out. You know what I mean? Because I think there comes a point where you realize, if I just keep waiting, no one else is going to step in. This might be something I'm meant to do. I don't know, but I'm going to try.
Well, what's your plan?
It's been the master plan, I outlined it a little bit in one of the videos. The big dream is, I look at the model of how it happened with Oasis and Creation, and for years I've sort of held this kind of sadness, really, that I was just born a bit too late. I was born a generation too late to be in a gigging band that formed a following, went out and played, and was discovered by a record company scout. Those days are gone now. They do it all online. It all changed from the year 2000, by the time I was about the age to be earning enough money to actually fund something like that. And I just realized that the way the industry works now, it doesn't put music first. It's a music industry that doesn't put bloody music first. It's just money, 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 money. And you've got these, I mean, I've had people in the last 2 weeks sending me demos that are just outstanding. Some of them demos I've heard in the last couple of weeks should be number one. And so I realized that for things to change, we need independent record companies, just like Creation in the 90s, independent record companies that are not beholden to the big three, who can scout new talent and promote new talent on nothing but the basis of their music. That's what's missing, because all the industry now has apparently, they've bought up all the indie companies. This is one of my emails that I had from a viewer, told me that the big three now actually own, it's something like 98% of all the indie companies and all the indie record companies. And that just blew my mind. They're not indie anymore. A proper indie record company scene doesn't exist. So I have put out a master plan where I'm gonna start by just releasing an EP of my own stuff to see if it gets traction, to see if I can get it registered with the chart company, registered with Amazon or whoever, to actually get it all properly done. Then I'm going to release an album. And if all those things go well, if everything comes together, there's various steps along the journey that eventually I hope will culminate in me being able to set up, in this climate, in the world of streaming, a viable indie record company in the UK that signs new acts based on their music. I lay down my burdens by the banks of the river. I lay down my burdens by the banks of the river. Again, I couldn't feel it, but hope was in me. River rolled in blue. I lay down my burdens on you. I couldn't see it, but love was with me. River rolled in true. I lay down my burdens on you. Because it's a big dream, and getting to that stage is probably years down the road. But as I've talked about it, the level of excitement has just been off the scale. It's been unbelievable. I think right now I feel hopeful. I don't want to oversell it, and I don't want to overcommit myself. But right now I feel hopeful.
Yeah. No. Well, that's brilliant, mate. And you know, I don't know if you followed it, but Bits and Pieces, Mark, who does Bits and Pieces, put out an album last year, a compilation of young artists and unsigned. And yeah, it got him, he, you know, made it eligible for the charts and stuff. I think he got to 54 in the end, you know, and he got played, tracks got played on Steve Lamacq and stuff like that. And it was just like, yeah, great. You know, why hasn't there been, you know, like, this is like basically Shine. Like, we all would all buy the Shine compilations and stuff, but for the next generation, and no one's doing it. So Mark took it upon himself to do that. And I think it's great what you're doing. And, you know, as we see from the views that you get and from the listens that I get and the Twitter following for all these online radio stations that have jumped up at the moment as well, you know, there's a love and a passion for this music, and it's just not being served. And with the way the charts can be, like we're seeing, if you've got, you know, people are passionate and they're willing to spend 10, 15 quid in a CD or a vinyl or whatever, you can get into the charts. You know, it might be the physical charts, you know, but there is a passion for it. And I think that marketed in the right way and to tap into that emotion, like you're doing, I think it's, yeah, that there is, you know, it's worth doing, man. It's great. You know, there is a massive opportunity out there. And it's brilliant that if you're going to help young artists and unsigned artists as well along the way.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing we need is, there's so many of us out there, but we're kind of scattered. And it needs for us all to kind of basically work together. If we did, we'd be absolutely unstoppable, because there is so many of us. I think part of the problem is that the industry has become so fragmented, and everyone doesn't come home from work and flip on one of five TV channels anymore.
Sure.
We're not all on the same page almost anywhere.
Sure.
And so the big thing is kind of getting people together, getting people all moving in the same direction. But I do believe it can be done. And I do believe that the whole country is ready and ripe for the next wave. I think that the charts can't stay as they are, because they are so unrepresentative of public tastes. I mentioned earlier that when in non-COVID times, I gig every weekend and I know the music that clears a dance floor. I know what works and what doesn't. And people like melodic music. They like rock and roll. And this is people of all ages. This is people of all ages, you know. I think especially, I don't know if you actually live in London, and so I'm not slagging Londoners off in any way, but in London, I think if you live in London, as most record company executives do, it's hard to really properly have an ear to the street. It's hard to really get a feel for what the British people are actually thinking. And because the whole industry, it's in London, they just get it wrong all the time.
Yeah.
And my feeling with being in touch with the world is that the time is coming. My sense is just that this can happen as long as we can kind of get people facing the same direction and say, if we do this, we can make this happen. You know, we need a plan, we need a direction, but I want to play whatever part I can in that, you know?
Well, that's absolutely brilliant, mate. Well, let's hope so, eh? Fingers crossed. Well, James, thank you so much for your time today. It's been absolutely brilliant to talk Don't Look Back in Anger and talk about, the new rock revolution as and when it comes. Where can the kids find you online? The YouTube, what's the best place for them?
Yeah, the place I'm on the most is YouTube. I try to reply to comments in general. I don't get to everyone, but I try. So it's James Hargreaves Guitar on YouTube. And I have very recently bitten the bullet and joined Twitter on James H Guitar, although I admit I'm a bit shit at checking it.
That's all right. Well, I'll link that so everyone can go and check it out and get you over that. Just the 500,000 views on that secret chord video, eh? So we'll try and get a few more views on that one because, I know that video has been struggling.
Yeah, so, rack them up.
Yeah. Cool. All right, James. Well, thank you so much for your time, mate. And we'll speak again soon.
All right, mate. All the best. Take care of yourself.
All right, so thank you very much to both Ben and to James. It was a really interesting discussion. And if you want to chip in on whether or not indie is done for now, or is it going to go back, or maybe it's amazing and we're just missing out on the most incredible music ever, but I'd love to hear it if it's out there. So do feel free to get in touch. The email is oasispod@gmail.com. You can follow on the socials, Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, and Oasis Pod on Instagram. And you can become a patron and support me at patreon.com/oasispod. Now, as of recording this, I've actually got 99 patrons. So it would be brilliant if someone out there would go and sign up to get me over that 100. That would be absolutely fantastic. And we've got something that me and a bunch of patrons, especially Ryan Harvey, who's worked his backside off on this, have put together. And once I get to 100 patrons, we're going to be releasing that. So if someone wants to push me over the edge, we will get to 100. And and then we will release this very cool thing. All right, that will do it. As ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
Doesn't move so fast anymore, you know. It's kind of like, you two have been the biggest band in the world for the last 20 years. Red Hot Chili Peppers, us. The Rolling Stones have been going now for, I think they're in their second 100 year, aren't they? They've been going for 200 years now, the Stones. There's always a clutch of new bands doing it for the kids. I don't know how Australian idols get on, yeah. But the British version, that's wrong as fuck. They last for about 6 months. Then they end up in rehab. That is very interesting, you know, to see some fucking fat idiot who works in a supermarket convince himself that he's a fucking superstar. Have you got any songs? Not really. When he finally realises that actually he's a fat idiot from a supermarket who got lucky, it turns to alcoholism and ends up killing his own gerbils. That's brilliant. I like that side of it, but the music's shocking. Is that it? Fucking switch it off.